This is Lynn Benton Tractor's Newsmakers with Brent DeHart and Dave Bourne. Presented by Les Schwab Tires and sponsored in part by Furbish, a salvage place, and Kennedy Tax Solutions. Live, local talk that matters to you. Now, here's Brent and Dave from the Capital Auto Group Studios, exclusively on 1430 KYKN. Salem is listening.
And welcome to Newsmakers. This is Brent DeHart, and Dave Bourne is on vacation, and it is a beautiful day in the Willamette Valley. What a wonderful place to live and to wake up no matter what the weather is. So, hey, welcome, and thank you for sharing your news hour with us here at noon on Monday through Friday. We talk about local events. We talk about local institutions, ideas, individuals, initiatives, and all that good stuff that affect your pocketbook, could affect your quality of life. So today, there's so many things to talk. I come in here Monday all fired up with things to talk about. However, we're going to have a full hour here in the studio today. I have my friend Jason Brandt, and so many topics to talk about that affect us in Oregon and in Willamette Valley, and of course at the Capitol. So Jason, formerly CEO of the Salem Area Chamber of Commerce, and currently, what is your title, Jason? Well, he's with ORLA, Oregon Restaurant and Lodging Association. First of all, welcome to the studio.
Thank you. Great to be here.
And what's your title?
President and CEO.
President and CEO. He gets to two jobs. We get paid for two jobs. So Jason, I've known for quite some time, and I wanted him in the studio to talk about the state of the industry. And this touches a lot more of us than you would imagine, the people that he represents. So Oregon Restaurant and Lodging Association.
That's correct.
So this is a trade association.
It
looking after the interests of members.
Yeah.
Right? Membership organization.
That's right.
And you're an advocacy organization.
We are.
And how is your... I mean, so we're talking hotels and we're talking about all the places that we eat. So not a lot of us don't go to a hotel every week, but we might eat out at least once a week. So how many members and what types are they in this association?
Sure. Yeah. Our organization represents about 2,800 locations around Oregon. In total, though, the hospitality industry, restaurants and lodging specifically, you got about 10,000 restaurant or food service locations throughout the state and another 2,500 lodging properties. So on average, about one in five of the locations is an active member. You know, our association is a voluntary association like a lot of nonprofits out there. We're there to help the industry benefit and help them be promoted in the most meaningful ways. So we do our best work in the Capitol building and with local governments around the state. But there's a lot going on right now for hospitality, like in a lot of other areas politically. We're the second largest private sector employer in the state behind healthcare. So wow. Healthcare and then the hospitality industry. So over 180,000.
More than tech.
180,000 Oregonians work in the hospitality industry. So workforce issues are incredibly important to us. And there's a lot of return on investment when it comes to sending a promotional dollar outside of your community or outside of our state and then getting a traveler to come here and use their discretionary income here in Oregon. So we see tourism as an export economy. It truly is.
All right. So this is one of the economic activity subjects that intersect with government, that intersect with quasi-governmental agencies, and of course intersects with the private sector. So it's complicated, and you've got a lot of people to have relationships with. So why does there need to be an ORLA? I mean, if a regular listener to Newsmakers has heard about trade associations and how, even though some people would consider them some of those evil special interests.
Oh, sure.
Right? Although I don't think special interests are necessarily evil, because if I own a restaurant, I want somebody looking after me. And I was actually president of my trade association when I was in a different industry, and it was statewide association. So what is the purpose of ORLA? Why does it need to exist?
Well, first of all, the term special interest has always been one that's fascinated me, because I don't really care who you're talking to. Everyone has potentially a special interest in something that they're passionate about. A better way to probably describe it for us is we're passionate about making sure people have an exceptional experience when they cross the border into our state. And when they cross the border into a county or a city to enjoy something that's going on from a tourism standpoint. So our job is literally to share the facts and the information with elected officials that are literally overwhelmed by a lot of other issues, some of which you could argue are bigger issues than what we see in our specific industry right now. And I'm sure we'll talk about those, the things that are prioritized in the Capitol building right now. The reality is it's our job to be the experts on what's happening on the ground inside hotels and inside restaurants. So when you think about it, we all love hotels and we all love restaurants. When we think about that in our own experiences, we probably smile and think about memories with our family and friends, getting away from the stress of a regular day. It's my job to not think like that. It's my job to think about the ins and outs, the bolts of the actual operations, what makes them sustainable, what makes them work, how can we support them more often. And with thousands and thousands of bills introduced in the legislative session and hundreds of agenda items on city council agendas and county commission agendas, you need an advocate and a champion, someone that has that pulse to explain what's really happening so we can make the best decisions possible.
I know that obviously your job in your industry intersects with taxation.
Yeah, very
and
much so.
For the Salem-Keyser, and for the Salem area, of course, we refer to TOT funds, one of those acronyms, Transit Occupancy Tax, because the government just can't say, you know, hotel tax.
Right.
Transit Occupancy Tax, and that's a fund that goes and it feeds into promoting tourism and bringing outside people to the area and having them leave dollars behind. I think a lot of people miss how incredibly dynamic it is and beneficial it is for people from the outside the area to bring their dollars here and leave them behind, be it with the gas station, with the rental cars, with the hotels,
right,
with the servers, with the restaurants, with the shops and all of those things that help our economy go around.
Right? Yeah, very true. I mean, the majority of our time is really spent making sure we're actively promoting that reality. I mean, how else can we, if we don't have a statewide sales tax, how else can we capture the revenue that we need to make sure tourists are paying their fair share, if you will, for the impact they have on our communities. And the lodging tax can be a way in which we do that, but there's very important protections in place for how those lodging taxes can be spent. And we're talking about over 100 communities in Oregon that collect a total of tens of millions of dollars. In their local economies. You add up all those dollars, there's tens of millions of dollars. And then we have a statewide lodging tax with our great partners at Travel Oregon that's used, you know, creating the brand for Oregon, which has been very successful. So that when we think about taxes, the first thing we think about is return on investment. If our industry is going to have to collect a tax in partnership with government, how is the industry going to benefit from that tax? And so all of these lodging taxes and the complexities that surround them are very, very important to us, and we watch them very carefully.
Yeah, we were talking on Newsmakers just last week, actually. The lack of a sales tax does change a different dynamic, you know, and how I don't think we're going to have one anytime soon. But it is a different dynamic because those visitors are one population that we do not get to collect taxes from when they come through the state.
Yeah.
I mean, by and large.
Yeah, not having a sales tax actually puts a lot of extra pressure on our industry. If you think about it, if you're an elected official and you're trying to find a way to get extra revenue to fill your budget deficit because you're constitutionally required to balance your budget, how can you get the visitor coming into your community to pay for their entry into the community without having a sales tax? Well, how about we increase the local lodging tax, or how about we create a restaurant meals tax like they're proposing in Hood River County right now? We just defeated a restaurant meals tax in the city of Jacksonville down in southern Oregon. So these pressures are real, and the big picture challenges of cost escalations within state government that are also mandated down to the cities and counties are creating real problems, and they're big leadership challenges. Mm-hmm. And we actually see it on the back end. We see when we're not willing to face the leadership challenges of our day, then there's these residual effects that trickle down to those local levels that end up potentially adversely impacting one industry.
Well, I'm more interested in how they impact my pocketbook, too.
Yeah.
So anyway, we're going to take a break. We're talking to Jason Brandt. He's the president and CEO of the Oregon Restaurant and Lodging Association. We're going to talk about things that affect your pocketbook and things that are going on at the legislature. And watch the money. Watch the money. You're listening to Newsmakers on 1430 KYKN. Salem is listening.
This is Lynn Benton Tractor's Newsmakers with Brent and Dave, presented by Les Schwab Tires and sponsored in part by Furbish, a salvage place, and Kennedy Tax Solutions. Now, let's go back to the Capital Auto Group studios on 1430 KYKN. Salem is listening.
And Welcome back to Newsmakers. This is Brent DeHart. Dave Bourne is on vacation. We're talking with Jason Brandt, local boy, local man now. Went to Sprague.
That's right.
Right. Raises a family here in Salem, although he's president and CEO of a statewide advocacy organization, Oregon Restaurant and Lodging Association. He lives right here in our community. And one of the things we like to do here is spotlight individuals that are doing things that you may not even know happen in terms of this huge industry for our state and for our region. Here we are, one of the doorsteps for the wine industry.
Yeah, that's
the,
right.
The state capital, a lot of tourism and a lot of restaurant and lodging issues. So I teased just before that we took the break to watch the money. You were talking to me before the show about, because there's local taxes for lodging.
That's
and
right.
And in Salem, it's going to the Transit Occupancy Tax Fund, which funds Travel Salem and helps promote Salem and the region. But there's also a state tax. Right?
Yes, and sometimes county taxes.
And so the state's going to collect this money, and where does the taxes go? So you go to, I mean, you go rent a hotel room, and you pay $100, and it turns out to be $118, right? Because it's always quoted up, it's taxes. So where's the state portion go?
Yeah, so right now, state law has a 1.8% statewide lodging tax in effect. And that doesn't matter whether you're staying in a house or a hotel. If you're a tourist that's paying money to stay in a lodging residency, then there's going to be a 1.8% statewide tax, regardless of whether there's any county or city tax on the books.
That could be Hilton, and it could be a bed and breakfast.
Right. Doesn't matter where you are. If you're in the borders of Oregon, you have at least 1.8%. On top of that, it depends where you are, what county you're in, what city you're in within that county, because it is possible to have a city, a county, and a statewide lodging tax on your hotel bill when you stay somewhere.
Everybody wants a bit of your tourism. Okay.
And so within those dollars, the 1.8% statewide lodging tax is completely held onto and contained for statewide tourism promotion. So that's a Travel Oregon responsibility, a quasi-governmental agency that creates the brand for Oregon, and they do a phenomenal job with that 1.8%. The other dollars, the county and the city dollars that are collected, are a partnership typically between that government jurisdiction and a local management organization that oversees marketing and branding for a community.
Like Travel Salem here.
Like Travel Salem or Visit Bend or Travel Portland or Visit Corvallis. These are our partners that are doing the promotional activity, while ORLA, the Restaurant and Lodging Association, does the advocacy.
That's
activity.
A really good distinction right there. So you have these not, you know, most of them nonprofits, right?
Right.
And they're promoting Salem and the region for us, or Bend in the region. And then Oregon Restaurant and Lodging Association, ORLA, is to advocate for the needs and of the industry.
Yeah.
Right? And the interests of the industry.
Yeah, we know that a dollar sent out there in promotion of your city, your county, your state, provides a significant return on investment in terms of the total spending that comes from that dollar, as well as lodging taxes from that person that comes and stays in the community. So it's in everyone's best interest to make sure tourism continues to succeed and thrive. A lot of folks are getting concerned about too much tourism. It's almost like we're too successful with tourism. And I always joke about the fact that our tourism promotional agencies are pretty smart. They know that if they're already successful, for example, in the summer, they're going to move those promotional dollars to a time when tourism isn't already as successful as possible, like the shoulder seasons or the winter season. So just using an example, if we're having conversations with elected officials saying, hey, we don't know if we want to spend as much money doing tourism out here on the coast because we already have too much of it, we remind them that there's no such thing as a constant flow of tourists in all four seasons of the year. Like there's new things that you could promote, like storm watching on the coast at a time when tourism is really desperately needed.
Yeah.
Our members always talk about there being a seasonal recession on the coast, and it's true. The dollars and the sales revenue within tourism companies falls off the deep end when it comes to moving out of October and into those winter months until spring starts picking up again.
All right, back to the taxes. So 1.8 is going to the state. That's going to Travel Oregon. They're promoting the state, right?
That's right.
Where all that money goes. Department of Revenue collects it, gives it to quasi governmental agency.
Right.
What about the local taxes? I know there's a split in how they spend it, and some of it is split with tourism or with promotion, right? Tell us what's going on at the Capitol in terms of that split being at risk.
Yeah, so right now as we speak, there's a hearing coming up actually today at 3 p.m. on Senate Bill 595, which proposes to change how lodging taxes are used. So right now, there were massive lodging tax reforms back in 2003. And basically, what it says is that new or increased lodging taxes that are implemented on July 2nd, 2003 or later, that of that new increased amount, 70% has to be spent on the tourism industry, tourism promotion, tourism-related facilities. The remaining 30% can be spent however the government entity sees fit, roads, bridges, police, fire, whatever they want, and we're fine with that. The thing that we care about is the 70% being protected. So we call it the 70-30 split. You increase the lodging tax that you're asking our members to collect, make sure that 70% of that money goes back to support the growth of the tourism industry, and you can do whatever you want with the other 30%. The bill in the Capitol today proposes to change the ratio from 70-30 to 40-30-30. So instead of 70%, the vast majority being reserved for tourism promotion and facilities, it would go from 70 down to 40. The government would still be able to use 30% for whatever they want. And get this, this new 30% left would now go to workforce affordable housing projects.
How is workforce affordable housing projects intersect with lodging tax?
I think the argument is tourism is so successful that we need more and more staff to create a customer service experience in certain parts of the state that require more employees. And because of that, it's putting additional challenges on supply of our housing, which I just don't buy. I mean, multi-use housing projects go up where there's demand. It's called the free market. So I still fail to understand why we would take dollars from something that's strategic and provide such a significant return on investment and have it go down a black hole like workforce housing projects.
All right, for the listener, because I have the benefit of writing this stuff down as Jason is talking about it and making myself little charts. But prior to 2003, those lodging taxes could be spent anywhere?
So,
or were they dedicated?
Part of the reform, it's a good question. Part of the reform, so July 1st, 2003, those local governments got locked in on whatever proportion they were spending on tourism promotion and facilities had to remain at that rate.
It could, so for some people, for some counties or jurisdictions, it could have been 100%. They could have all gone to travel, whatever.
That's right. And we have actually an active pending lawsuit, which I probably shouldn't talk about on air, against the city of Bend. But it's important distinction to make sure that just in general, that everyone knows that on July 1st, 2003, not only was your amount that you were spending locked in, any agreements you made to phase in more money to be spent on tourism promotion and facilities had to be adhered to. So if you had an agreement in place on July 1st to spend more than you were at that date, then you had to fulfill that agreement in its entirety.
All right. So since 2003, so let's talk the modern age. Salem or Marion County raises a percent of their taxes for lodging.
Yeah.
70% of it's going to be spent on tourism, and 30% can go in a general fund. We'll call that just a discretionary money for the local jurisdiction.
Sure.
So 30% can be spent by the local jurisdiction. In the legislature now and today, they're talking about a bill that 30% could go into the general fund for the local jurisdiction to spend however they want. They can spend it on roads or on whatever they want, right? Libraries and parks and what have you. But they're going to take the tourism component and split it out to help subsidize workforce lodging projects.
That's the proposal, which we're deeply concerned about. I mean, if you can imagine, when you have a tax that's being collected entirely by one industry, I just find it disrespectful to propose that that industry solve the workforce problems of all of society
I think the lodging association should also solve the education issues and the healthcare issues and the transportation issues. Would you mind being
taxed
to
that.
Do that?
Yeah.
Wow. I'm sorry, but under the surface when I hear that, I just think that is just another desperate grab to say, hey, who else can we nab this money from? And it's also, I mean, you look at the money that's dedicated. I look at the money. I'm sure you do, too. That's dedicated to promoting the tourism. And well, that's feeding the goose. That money's feeding the goose because it's bringing the people in that are causing this economic activity that's helping us all. And when people make money in Oregon, and that's the bottom line, and people have to make money in Oregon for the state to get the tax money.
That's right.
Yeah, and you're doing the return that on investment the return argument. On the investment. Yeah. So there's got to be a huge multiplier in terms of the money that's coming in from those taxes. And then you promote and you're feeding the golden goose, right? That's what the 70% is doing, is feeding the golden goose and getting people to come here and spend their money here so that people make money. So in a sense, the state wants to get their money twice. They want to get it up front when they come, and then they want to get it from the income tax of the economic activity that it generates.
That's right. There's, you know, it's fascinating when you look at the return on investment. Third-party entities that have reviewed how successful sending a promotional dollar out of your community or state is in bringing back visitor spending and more local and state tax dollars. So a third party, Longwoods International, assessed this a few years back. It shows that a dollar sent out has an over 100 time return on investment for visitor spending. So you send a dollar out, you have over $100 coming back in visitor spending and $11 in local state taxes.
Wow, and then we have
it's an insane return on investment.
And this is why ORLA needs to exist. It and other trade associations like it to educate legislators that hopefully can understand it and take the time to do so and don't just look at the problem and knee-jerk reaction. All right, we're going to take a break because we're talking to Jason Brandt from Oregon Restaurant Lodging Association, and we got to talk a little bit more about restaurants because that touches most everyone's pocketbook as well. You're listening to Newsmakers on 1430 KYKN. Salem is listening.
Lynn Benton Tractor's Newsmakers, presented by Les Schwab Tires, continues in the Capital Auto Group studios. Here's Brent DeHart and Dave Bourne on 1430 KYKN. Salem is listening.
And welcome back to Newsmakers. This is Brent DeHart, and Dave Bourne is on vacation. I hope you're having a great time, and I hope that Dave is, of course, streaming us every single day, as you can do on KYKN.com. So we have in studio today so many things to talk about with Jason Brandt, a friend of mine and local resident. Formerly, he led our Chamber of Commerce as CEO, and now he's leading a statewide association, an Oregon Restaurant and Lodging Association. We were talking about lodging and lodging taxes and some of the legislation. Honestly, we could talk for 3 hours with Jason Brandt because these things affect people's pocketbooks and their jobs and our ability to go out and have some food and afford it. Some of the things that I look at, because this segment, we really want to talk about the restaurant part of this, because this trade association is huge. And it does intersect with legislation and regulation and city governance and county governance and nonprofits that promote tourism and, of course, all of us and the jobs that it creates. It's extraordinary. Are you serious? Did you say this is like the second largest sector of employment in Oregon?
Yeah, second largest private sector employer. So just only behind healthcare.
Wow. More than agriculture?
That's correct, yeah.
That is
mind-blowing. Leisure and hospitality.
Unbelievable. And we're talking before the break about how if you're not watching, the government is going to pick your pocket and take money that's for one thing and put it in another, depending on what the priorities of the day are. And right now, the priorities of the day, and I did hear Speaker Kotek talk last week, you know, it is affordable housing. That's not high on the list. It is cap and trade. Fortunately, you're not in the energy industry, but we all know the cap and trade is going to affect the bottom line of your members.
Right.
And of course, education, and of course, raising taxes. So let's talk a little bit about the restaurant, because you got a lot of members in the restaurant industry.
We do,
right?
Yeah.
Is it mom and pops? Is it chains? Is it all across the board?
It's all across the board. Yeah.
And so I think about it, because I have in my past iterations of career employed entry level workers. So minimum wage has certainly got to be a factor for restaurants, but also things in regulation that affect like your scheduling. That one drives me crazy when the government decides they need to interject themselves into how small business schedules their employees, and family leave laws and mandatory vacation laws and all of these things. How How does that affect the model of how your members in the restaurant side are delivering the goods?
Well, it's just one more thing to manage, right? That typically always has a cost associated with it that then has to be passed on to the consumer. That then affects your monthly budget and your stress level if you can't take your kids out for a meal as much as you used to. Because who's going to pay for a $20 burger, right? So there's a lot of things happening on the in the restaurant scene. I mean, there's models all over the place from, you know, everything from fast casual to fine dining, of course, and all of those members are represented at Orla. And so we have to follow different things for different reasons. The main thing that we're concerned about in the restaurant industry is the death of the full service model, where you actually have a service staff to enjoy that type of experience, where you're not having to get up and get your own cups and refill your own beverages and your own condiments at a condiment station. Of course, all of us are familiar with counter service models. And for a lot of the types of experiences we're looking for, that's fine. But there's times when you want to go out with your family or with friends or with loved ones and have a meal and be waited on.
Right.
We have plenty of those opportunities in communities across the state. The issue is, in a full service model, your labor costs are about 40% of sales because of all those new regulations. It used to be about 33% on average.
Wow.
So, and the national average for the amount a restaurant makes is 3 to 5% margin, razor thin margin. So you have to sell $1 million in food and beverage to make $30,000 to $50,000 profit after paying for everyone in your business.
Yeah, don't get me started on trying to tax gross receipts instead of taxing profits.
3 to 5%. One of the problems we have is the perception in the public of how much restaurants do make. We've had focus groups on the West Coast that show us that in some cases, the average voter thinks a restaurant makes up to 40% profit on sales, not 3 to 5%. And the issue with politics is that when we're creating laws in our states, public perception always precedes public policy. So when you think about it, our legislators are voluntarily agreeing to run for office and to serve the people. And they think the same way that all of us think, at the average voter. And so if the average voter thinks that a restaurant can make 40% profit, why wouldn't the legislator think that a restaurant can make 40% profit? And boy, that's a lot of profit. Mm-hmm. So let's add another tax.
So let's repeat that. Jason Brandt with Orla is talking with us. You have to sell $1 million on average of food product at a restaurant to make 30 to 50 thousand.
On average, national average. Right.
But and the other number you cited, and sometimes numbers are hard on radio and they don't translate very well, but that the labor costs in Oregon might be 40% of the ticket for your lunch.
Right. And that's including all of the menu price increases that happen on a regular basis because of the minimum wage you mentioned. So the restaurants have to protect that 3 to 5% margin. So what we're seeing is cost escalations that are starting to impact that margin, which in turn are having a lot of family-owned small business restaurants wondering if they can hold on to their wait staff or if they need to change their business model to a counter service model.
Okay, so for the listener, if you go out and you spend $50, and the ticket on the is $50 for a nice lunch or whatever for a couple of you, that means that $20 is going towards the labor costs on average in the industry. $20. That's before they paid for the food.
Right.
That's before they paid for the person that prepared the food, much less the overhead and the building and the rent and the lease and the utilities and the insurance and so forth. $20 of that $50 is going to the labor costs, right?
Yeah, historically you could
was that service or
you
is it
could
all
break
labor?
It up into thirds really in terms of expenses. A third for food, a third for labor, and a third for your operational costs, your overhead, your rent, your utilities, those types of expenses, your insurance. A third, a third, and a third. And then at the end you're left with 3 to 5%. You know,
$2.50 on that $50 ticket.
Roughly speaking. And so anything that impedes on that 3 to 5% is gonna create a huge problem. So the way we like to say it, and we're going to be talking about this more directly with consumers, we're launching something called the Receipt Project in Salem soon, where hopefully if you're dining with a participating restaurant, you'll open up your receipt folder and there will be a message that says, We value you. Thank you for your service. Because of you, 95 cents of every dollar goes back into your food, our people, and our place. Thanks, come again. Very positive message to make sure that people realize that out of their dollar, 95 cents on that dollar is going back into their experience. And they're making it possible by dining there.
And that's a pre-tax dollar, of course. Because, you know, there are jurisdictions that are taxing meals, right? It's been floated in Salem.
Yeah, we have two meals taxes in Oregon, city of Yahotson, city of Ashland. Both have meals taxes. I mentioned earlier that we defeated one in the city of Jacksonville in the November election in 2018. And there's another one being proposed for the May ballot in Hood River County to cover their deficit hole.
Okay, when the meal taxes go in, say, the city of Ashland, does that include your Big Mac as well as your fine dining?
It would, yes.
Wow.
Okay, yeah,
so
all prepared,
everybody's pocketbook.
All prepared food, right. So not just so the argument is, yeah, the people in the community, so let's take Hood River County, people in the community would have to pay this too, but at least we're capturing some of the visitor traffic that are dining out and getting that revenue as well. My issue is, if Hood River County's meals tax passes, it's 5%. That's like someone that does nothing to create that business model or that product or service coming in and taking, usually on average, the exact amount of profit the restaurant owner has to make just to make the business run. So if a restaurant in Hood River County is making 3 to 5%, and then the government knocks on the door and says 5%, I want to keep that 5% for my own government problems. How is that? That feels like the mafia to me a little bit. I mean, if they're doing nothing to create value in the restaurant, why do they have the right to grab 5% just like the restaurant owner who's maybe getting 5% profit? It's just ridiculous.
And, you know, we're small business advocates here, both Jason and I. And it's the restaurant owner, the small business, is taking all the risk. You know, despite what President Obama said famously about, you know, we didn't build it on our own. The government surely helped us build the small business. So, and yeah, we're here to talk about Orlab. But another example, I was in the gasoline business, as you know. And for years, I was trying to make 12 cents on whatever the gallon cost that day. Well, I'm collecting like 45 cents of taxes on behalf of the government. Right?
Yeah.
And the government, you know, so, but as the retailer, I'm trying to make 12 and it costs me about 8 cents a gallon to have the attendant out there. So now you're trying to cover all your expenses with, you know, 6 cents. But like you said, like the same situation, you're collecting these taxes from an entity that didn't put anything in to create that economic activity model.
Yeah. I mean, places where the average voter has to have a monetary transaction are easy targets to balance budgets. So gas stations, grocery stores, restaurants, hotels, those are places where if we have a revenue desire, that would be a place to potentially look for more money, which is what we're seeing today.
All right. Really quickly, because we're going to have to take our last break here, but do these things, these cost escalators, they're moving the models of how people are doing business. You see pay at the table, you see pay and order at a kiosk, that kind of thing. People handing you a tablet to put your credit card, all those things.
Yeah.
Is that a way that your members are seeing having to invest in technology?
Oh, yeah. There's a lot of technological investment taking place, and full service models can still succeed. I just had a personal experience at Filbert's Farmhouse in Aurora, which has amazing food, recently opened, and they're killing it. They're doing amazing business out in Aurora, kind of a farm staple authentic meal that you would have there. But with a few exceptions like Filbert's, I would say the majority of new operations are all counter service for the most part. Counter service models are the ones that pencil, not full service models, unless you're lucky enough to have a killer chef that keeps people coming back.
Now you see the trend of the industry that you probably already noticed, and you heard it here from Jason Brandt of Orla. We're going to come back and wrap up and talking about all the different models of, and actually the issues that are affecting restaurant and lodging in the industry. You're listening to Newsmakers on 1430 KYKN. Salem is listening.
This is Lynn Benton Tractor's Newsmakers with Brent and Dave, presented by Les Schwab Tires and sponsored in part by Furbish, a salvage place, and Kennedy Tax Solutions. Now, let's go back to the Capital Auto Group studios on 1430 KYKN. Salem is listening.
And welcome back to Newsmakers. This is Brent DeHart. I'm missing Dave Bourne here. He's taking some well-deserved time off. And we're talking to Jason Brandt, local Salemite. Grew up here and grew to, went to college, came back, led the chamber, worked at the chamber, led the chamber as CEO, and then jumped to statewide advocacy with Oregon Restaurant and Lodging Association, what, two or three years ago?
You can believe it. I'm in my fourth year.
Fourth year, yeah. All right. So, so many things. Because it affects, we talked a little bit about lodging, a little bit about restaurant. Let's talk a little bit about labor and not just the workforce in general, but the training ground and how many people's first jobs are in your industry. Yeah,
it's pretty staggering. Nearly half of all Americans have an experience in the hospitality industry.
It needs to be all, right? My first job was flipping burgers.
Yeah, it's talk about an opportunity to develop interpersonal skills, which I think is getting really lost in some of the important strategic focus we have in other areas. But the ability to actually look someone in the eye and have a relevant customer service interaction with them is something that transfers to virtually any industry and any career. Mm-hmm. So I would argue that our industry is the best training ground for people to learn the true value of interpersonal skills, which is hard to quantify when you look at something on paper, dollars and cents wise. But there are studies out there now that prove that if you get your start in hospitality and the tourism industry, that your interpersonal skills will carry you to a better paying job than if you started somewhere else. There's an actual white paper on that that's been put out by the United States Travel Association. So it's proven that if you capture some of these important learning lessons early in life, you make those mistakes early, you figure out how to deal with certain challenging customers or how to make something right that went wrong with a customer, that no matter what you do, you're going to be a better problem solver and you're going to be more successful in life. That's what our industry offers. And I feel like it's easily lost just because the intangibles of that interpersonal skill development is hard to quantify.
And how easy it is to live an anonymous life and not have that in a new generation, a digital generation.
Oh, gosh, yeah. You could argue that it's even more important today because whereas when I was a kid going to Sprague, like you mentioned earlier, going out, maybe playing basketball in the park, Sunny Slope Park in South Salem with some of my friends, that activity, more likely than not, is replaced with video games on a couch at home, interacting with friends over a headset or over a phone, and you're not outdoors having that same type of in-person engagement.
Yeah, and the face-to-face.
Interpersonal skill development, social skill development even.
Exactly.
Yeah.
And like you said, and it's not just problems that you experience with clients or customers, but it's also what did you do right and what kind of positive feedback systems you have with that interpersonal. Yeah, great training ground. I could see that.
Yeah.
You know, it also changes your perspective on how you feel about the service industry, the service workers of all types, whether it's someone who's cutting hair, someone who's, providing a service at your home, any of these things in the service industry, and how, well, oh yeah, I worked in personal service. I worked in customer service, right?
We get a bad rap too. I mean, some people think that, oh, it's going to be a dead end if you start a job in a restaurant or a hotel. But the reality is that a lot of the people on the lodging side move up into positions of significant managerial expertise where they're eventually potentially running the show of a hotel operation.
Mm-hmm.
On the restaurant side, we have examples locally, Joey and Jen, who have been managers at Best Little Roadhouse, who are now taking over the ownership of the restaurant.
Wow.
From one of our previous leaders of our board of directors, Ralph Matt. And Best Little Road, they've been working there for years, but they moved up that ladder to eventually take on ownership. And that's the American dream, right?
Mm-hmm.
Starting, learning the ins and outs of a business, developing those interpersonal skills, and then finding a pathway to be your own boss someday if you wish to be that.
So in hospitality, really, this is needed worldwide, right?
Yeah.
Hospitality skills.
Our job vacancies actually surpassed healthcare. Remember how I mentioned earlier that we're the second largest private sector industry? The latest stats from the employment department show that we have more job openings now than the healthcare industry, and that's pretty rare. So we have a huge workforce issue on our hands in hospitality in Oregon.
And workforce is always a conversation. It is in Oregon, it is in Salem, it is worldwide. And those skills, so this is a career that somebody could build. Maybe they just start at a lower paying job or an entry level job, but it is a career that you could launch without necessarily having a 4-year degree or higher.
That's right.
In hospitality.
You know, sometimes college is just not a good fit for how we can be wired as people. We need to go right into the workforce, learn skills in real time and real events, and maybe go to college later in life or whatever your journey looks like. The reality is that our training ground is very significant in its development. And its ability to develop people and give them the opportunity to succeed in life no matter where they end up.
It's also one of the flexible jobs, and it's one of the things that drives me crazy when the government, and I'd say the government, and what I really mean is people who are on one side of the aisle that think the government needs to control everything that happens in the labor arena and the predictive scheduling efforts. And frankly, a lot of people work in service jobs like your restaurant members, because they need a flexible schedule because they might be in school or because they have childcare issues, right?
Yeah, that's the irony of it all when it comes to scheduling is for those businesses that it does apply to out there, that new labor regulation, it actually took away flexibility for those employees that are affected by that new law. So if you're on the schedule to work a certain day and you were hoping to, you know, maybe do something different, like hit the slopes or something like that, you have less of a chance of that happening now than you did before that law passed, which is just one of the challenges we face in educating our elected officials and the general public.
One of my challenges here on Newsmakers is to get everything in an hour. And we're talking to Jason Brandt. He's the CEO, President, Oregon Restaurant and Lodging Association. And they go to the Capitol and they advocate for things that make sense for their members and the workforce and the visitors and every one of us that utilizes lodging and restaurant services to try to beat down things that don't make sense. And so first of all, I want to say thank you for being out there. One thing I want the listener to get out of your visit today is that, you know, this is a trade association for an industry. It is intersecting with what happens at the legislature. It is intersecting with cities and counties and workforce and nonprofits and tourism promotion. And the return on investment for that investment is huge.
Yeah, we're here to protect, improve, and promote Oregon hospitality. That's our mission. That's what we're here to do. It's our DNA. So whenever we can work collaboratively with our partners, it makes for a better economy here in Oregon. And we're happy to do it. Our website's OregonRLA.org if people want to learn more about us.
Say that again with your radio voice.
www.OregonRLA.org.
OregonRLA.org. Well, thank you for that, Jason. And I hope to have you back, you know, especially as you're watching things at the legislature. Things that's trying to take money out of one sector into another and all that rigmarole that happens and the educational component that it takes for you to do your job. So we're going to wrap it up. Well, Anthony, thank you, and I hope you come back, and all the best to your family. You've been listening to Newsmakers on 1430 KYKN. Salem's listening. We'll see you tomorrow.
This has been Lynn Fenton Tractor's Newsmakers with Brent DeHart and Dave Bourne, presented by Les Schwab Tires and sponsored in part by Furbish, a salvage place, and Kennedy Tax Solutions. Live local talk that matters to you from the Capital Auto Group studios exclusively on 1430 KYKN. Salem is listening.